Yassis, and welcome to the Greece Travel Secrets podcast. Your host is the founder of the Greece Travel Secrets website, Sandy Pappas, and she's joined by a variety of guests covering all sorts of topics about visiting Greece and making the most of your Greek odyssey.
So welcome back to the Greece Travel Secrets podcast. Today I'm joined all the way from Greece by a gentleman by the name of Yannis Smiris. And Yannis and I are going to talk today about the fascinating region of Epirus. I'm not even sure I'm pronouncing that correctly. And excuse my pronunciation, I get crucified on TikTok. This is a region on the mainland where Yannis lives, and I assume has been there for a long time, which we're about to talk about. So thank you, Yannis, for joining me today. I know we've had a few attempts at this. It seems we've got there in the end.
So let me introduce myself. My formal name is Ioannis, but they call me Yannis. I come from Ioannina Prefecture, one of the four prefectures of Epirus region. It is very hard to remember me because the capital of Epirus is Ioannina, like my name. So Yannina or Yannis, Ioannina or Ioannis. My origins are from the mountains, mountainous range of Tzoumerka or Athamanic mountains, but I raised in Ioannina city, and I left my city when I was back in 1984, and I returned at the beginning of 2016. I'm next military officer. I served for 32 years in the army. So I decided to resign and follow my dream, my vision.
To promote your beautiful homeland.
I'm trying to promote, yes, and in our vocabulary, we don't use at all the word the tourist. We use only, at the beginning, people are visitors or guests, and when they leave from our region, we become friends.
Oh, lovely. That's a wonderful sentiment. So I have been to, we've been to Yannina, but only briefly, and we've been to, where else have we been? Paga, briefly. We flew into Preveza once and went straight to Corfu. So I have to say, I'm very embarrassed in a way. This is a part of Greece that I know very little about. However, we do have 10 days planned in Epirus next trip. So I'm super keen to talk to you about the wonders of the region and to help me personally work out my own itinerary. So I've got a bit of a selfish agenda on this one. Epirus is, so it's on the north western part of the mainland of Greece, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So it the Ionian Islands obviously lie off the coast, and it goes down as to the south as far as Preveza.
The coastline starts from Preveza and ends to the Greek Albanian borders, close to the port of Igoumenitsa, and the coastline is approximately 110 kilometers.
So it's a big region, a very big region, actually, and it goes to the east almost to Metiora?
The borders from between Epirus and Thessaly region is very close to Metiora. When we say close, we say a distance of 35 or 40 kilometers. The borders between Epirus region and Thessaly region is the mountainous range of Pindos Mountains.
Yes, okay. So we actually drove to Metiora from Yannina. I don't think a lot of people realize that that's an option. I think everybody thinks you have to visit from Athens. And we found that drive very easy, the big modern highway, no traffic, very, very easy. What, 90-minute drive from?
90-minute drive, yes, 90-minute drive.
Yeah. So, okay, tell me, so Yannina is the capital, and that's where you live?
Yes, I live in Yannina. Yannina is the capital of Epirus. The city has about 120,000 people, inhabitants. It is also a campus city, hosts about 25,000 students. It is located in the center of Epirus, so everything is close, either the coastline or the mountains.
And it's a beautiful city. As I said, we're only there briefly, but it's based around a lovely lake. And I was just reading that that's one of the oldest lakes in Europe, or the second oldest lake in Europe.
It is belongs to the sixth most ancient lakes in Europe. The name is Panvotida, but there is an issue at Ioanna. We have an island in the middle of the lake, which is unique worldwide, because it has about 200 permanent inhabitants, but it doesn't have a name. So it is called the no-name island.
That's quite unusual, isn't it? So do local residents just say, I live on the island? Yes. Is that what they refer to?
The island.
We didn't get over there. We saw the little ferry going over. It's beautiful to look at, particularly at nighttime. That whole waterfront is quite magical around the old town. I can only imagine, apparently, Ioannina is particularly beautiful right now in the autumn or the fall time, with all the beautiful leaves and the colours. I see those photos. It's a gorgeous town. So I'm really looking forward to going back and seeing a little bit more of Ioannina. Tell me more about the rest of Epirus. What are some of the highlights that people really need to, you know, think about when they're crafting their itinerary for the Greek mainland?
So because we talk about Ioannina, there is other places of interest in Ioannina. Very close to Ioannina is the Oracle of Dodoni, or Dodoni. It is the first ancient theater in Greece, an oracle, and it is dedicated to Zeus. Very close to the Oracle of the Dead, it is located a wax effigies museum, which shows the Greek history from the pre-revolutionary period until the modern times. We also have a cave, apart from the island. And the old town comes from the Venetians. And there are many places inside the castle. We call this the castle and not the old town. And it was a period of during the Ali Pasha, when Ali Pasha was governor, they lived all people together, Muslims, Jewish, and Greeks. They were living in peace, and there are many remainings of that area. This is for Ioannina. The other places close by to Ioannina. Shall I start from the coastline or the mainland?
Whatever you like. There's a place that I'm particularly interested in, and that is the Ambracian Gulf.
Yes, so.
And the wetlands, and particularly I'm very curious about, I guess it's a village really, Koronisia.
Koronisia, yes.
So this is a part of Greece that I think people would be really blown away to see the diversity in this type of wetland. I don't think people really associate that when they think of Greece. They think of the islands and, dryness and white architecture, but this is a whole other world.
Ambracian Gulf is first is famous for the shrimps and the rents, shrimps and sardines. The wetlands at Koronisia are excellent. It is amazing, because when you drive, go to that small village, from the left-hand side is the wetlands, fresh salty water, let's say, and from the right-hand side is the Ambracian Gulf. It is amazing because it is a road between the wetlands. The reason of the wetlands is because there are the river estuaries of River Louros and the River Arachthos. And it is a habitat for a rare species of birds. But Avrakian Gulf is well known from the past time because very close to Preveza is a Nicopolis town. Over there, Nicopolis, it was the Battle of Actium in 31 BC between the Romans and the Egyptians. It was Octavian Caesar against Cleopatra and Mark Antony. And because the Romans studied the Greek history, the Greek Persian Wars, they won the Egyptians. So Octavian Caesar decided to force all locals to go and stay at Nicopolis. And the reason for this name comes from Nike, which is the goddess of winning or victory, and Polis, which is the city. Nicopolis, the city of victory.
So where is that? It's near Preveza.
It is only 7 kilometers from Preveza.
Ah, and, sorry, I'm looking at a map now. Yes, there it is. I can see it. Yep.
And it Nicopolis was the second largest city in ancient times after Rome. Over there, they used to stay about 100,000 inhabitants. And the Romans were very innovative to construct aqueducts, because if you want to build a big city, you must consider
you need water. So it's called the Octavian Caesar Augustus Monument.
Yes.
Who knew? I had no idea that that existed. So that's quite fascinating.
And we say jokes to our American visitors when they come here. We tell them that you need to pay copyrights because you use for your sports industry Nike, the Greek work, Nike. So you must pay us copyrights.
Well, I think you have to take that up with the shoe manufacturer. Okay, well, that's wow. So right there, you've got the Gulf and a whole bunch of other ancient wonders around it, and I'm sure there's others
close
too.
Close to Nicopolis, about 15 to 20 minutes from Nicopolis, is the historical monument of Zalongo. At Zalongo, it is towards to the north. At Zalongo monument, it was a sacrifice from the women of Suli during the pre-revolutionary period. It was December 18, 1803. The women of Suli were chased by the Ottomans in order to capture them. So they decided to fall from a cliff, 60 women and 15 children. And there is a very emotional poet and song and dance here in Greece. We call that song Zalongo Dance. And that song says, "A fish cannot live on the land, nor a flower on the sand. Women of Suli cannot live without their freedom." And they jumped from a cliff, and the height of the cliff is 150 meters to the base, to the ground level. And after this, they constructed a nunnery at the bottom of the rock, the nunnery of Saint Demetrios, and it is nunnery because we honor these brave women. So more to the north, always to the coastline, it is located Necromandion, the oracle of the dead. And it was another oracle at the river estuaries of Acheron River estuaries. And it was the most famous in ancient times. And this is written also in Homer Odyssey. So the age of that place is more than 3,000 years.
Sorry, Yannis, what's it called?
Necromantion.
Necromantio. I'm trying to find it on the map.
On the map is at Mesopotamos, is between Preveza and Parga.
Oh, yes. Okay, found it. Just right near Parga. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Homer, in Homer Odyssey, is written that Odysseus, Ulysses, went there to find blind teller Tiresias in order to advise him how he could reach to his home island, Ithaca, in order to find Penelope.
The name of my dog.
But it was a fight between Odysseus and Poseidon, the god of the sea, because Odysseus killed his one-eyed cyclop, Polyphemus.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did. So this is after he returned from Troy.
After he returned, yes, no,
he had a fight with Poseidon, right? The man against the god. Yep.
And so there are so many historical places to the coastline. Also, because you have visited Parga, you can visit another one area. It is called Sivota. Sivota, it is called here in the Mediterranean Sea as the European Caribbean Sea, because there are many small islands, and you can visit them by taxi boats or rental boats. So Ionian Sea is characterized from the colors green and the clear, crystal clear waters.
Yes, we've passed through Sivota on the way to Corfu, and actually it reminds me a lot of Paleokastritsa on Corfu, with a series of bays and beaches and beautiful coves, and it's a very, very beautiful area. Pedaling back for a minute, I just wanted to cover off something. So you mentioned Mesopotamos. Mesopotamos, I should just say, that rhymes with hippopotamus. That's on the Acheron River.
Acheron River, estuaries.
Acheron River. Okay, it's like Arahova. And Acheron River, of course, was believed to be the gates of Hades.
Yes, and the Cerberus, the dog with the two hands.
The Cerberus, yes. So a really important area in terms of Greek mythology.
Yes.
And I'm a bit rusty on this story, but this is where the boatman would take people across the river. Yes. Well, I am a bit of a mythology buff these days, so I'm quite keen to go there and check it out for myself. Okay, so moving along, where are we now? We've been to Sivota.
Yes. And you can visit, there are numerous bays to all the coastline, more than 45 big or small beaches, and it is for every taste. You want to go to a very commercial place, you can go. You want to go to an isolated place, yes, you may go.
I hear a lot of people, you know, complaining that Parga has become too popular, too touristic. But really, it's not hard to go 5 or 10 kilometers in either direction and find very few people, very few tourists.
5 kilometers before Parga is Lichnos Beach. Lichnos Beach has history also from ancient times, because over there are the caves of Aphrodite or Venus. So it is. There are so many places at the coastline,
and this is something that comes up a lot all over Greece, I think, and probably many parts of the world. But people get turned off a particular place, Santorini, classic example, because they see the photos from Ia and from Fira, and they think that the whole island is like that, which is not the case. There's 20 towns and villages, and in a place like Epirus, which is so big, it's full of a multitude of options.
So we need to move towards to the mainland.
Uh-huh. Okay. Inland, in towards Janina?
No, we talked about Janina. We will talk about Zagori.
Ah, so that's north of Janina.
Yes, this is north. North and northeast.
And this is the area where Papingo is and Vikos.
Papingo is like Arachova. So Zagori area, so Zagori comes from, is a Slavic word and comes from Za, which translates to behind, and Gora, which translates to mountain. So the people who were staying at Janina, they were saying we will go to Zagori, to the area behind the mountain. That area is the most popular mountainous area in Greece. That area has 46 villages.
Wow. 46 okay.
Villages.
It's very, very, it's amazing for hiking, right? This is a hiker's paradise.
Yes, 370 kilometers of hiking routes from easy level difficulty up to hard difficulty. Mm-hmm. So up there to Zagori area is the deepest canyon on earth. It is a Vikos Gorge, and it is written in Guinness World Book of Records from 1997. It is separated in three parts. The first part, which is only for canyoning or river trekking. It is the main part of Vikos Gorge, which is the most well-known to the hikers. And it is the third part of Vikos Gorge, which is an easy trekking route, especially for families with small children.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because I think a lot of people assume that this is an area that's more suited to, you know, experienced hikers.
No. There are so many places from a very easy difficulty, and you can enjoy hiking there. Also, at Zagori, there are the well-known Dragon Lakes. In Epirus region, there are six Dragon Lakes. From a village Papingo, it is one of the most famous hiking routes in Greece, the hiking to the Dragon Lake, which is from moderate to hard difficulty level. And you can go to an alpine altitude, more than 2,000 meters. And there is the myth and the reality behind that name, the Dragon Lakes. The myth says that...
I was just going to ask you, what does Dragon Lake mean?
Dragon Lakes, the mythology says that comes from the ancient times, because they were living giants or titans up to the mountains, and they were fighting in daily basis. So they were throwing huge rocks from one mountain to another mountain. And this is the reason for the shape of the lakes. The reality, reality is that they got this shape, the lakes, after the melting of the end of Ice Age 10,000 years ago. And because the soil is limestone, ice and snow are very heavy. And this is the reason of having lakes to that altitude. But there are still dragons live there. The dragons that they live there and we observe them, they are alpine tritons, a kind of lizard, that they have like a frame at their back, like the frames we see at the cartoons. The dragons who blow fires, they have something in their back.
So we have frilled neck lizards in Australia with a big, they puff it up. But this is fascinating. Kids would love that. And I'm just looking at photos now of the Lake of Timpi.
Yes, it is the most popular dragon lake in the Epirus region.
And it looks absolutely stunning. It looks like you could be in Switzerland or Canada or, you know, any of those alpine kind of regions of the world. And I, again, think that I don't think many people have a clue that this is also on offer in Greece and probably at a fraction of the cost might I say, of some of those other places.
Also, Zagori is famous for the stone bridges.
Yes. And Thessaly. Thessaly has a bunch. I sought several of them out in Thessaly, which was an interesting day getting lost. We finally found a shepherd that, you know, had no teeth, and he wanted me to give him cigarettes, which we didn't have. And he finally helped us find one of the medieval stone bridges that were built by one of the monks from the monasteries. But I know that there are many others in this region as well.
Zagori has more than 100 stone bridges. The fascinating is the engineering of the stone bridges. So at that time, they didn't have the ingredients and they didn't have the wealth to buy concrete, for example. So the locals were constructing the stone bridges, and the ingredients were stones, sand, grass, water, and the glue was the white part of the eggs of the chicken.
Wow.
So it was very fascinating. And there are so many stone bridges that we go to these bridges very often. Single arch stone bridges, double arch stone bridges, and three arch stone bridges. Also, at Zagori areas is the longest stone steps in Greece, more than 150 stone steps, 39 turns, two stone bridges to go to the highest village of Zagori area. It is called Vradeto. The altitude is close to 1,300 meters. It is the only way of communication from that village to the other villages and to Ioannina, of course, because they constructed the road in 1973. So the road is very recent.
Mm.
This is about Zagori, let's say. It is only the highlights. And Zagori area is covered by UNESCO heritage list. And most of the villages, if you want to construct, to build or reconstruct a house, you must build by stone in order to keep the tradition.
Right. Oh, good. Yeah, I agree with that. So it sounds like you could spend at least a week in Zagori just on its own, maybe two. What's the best time of year to go there, Yanis?
I believe that everyone has his or her opinion. If, according to my personal opinion, it is May, because everything is blossom.
And the beautiful wildflowers.
Yes. Mm. And November until the middle of December, because you can see the changing of the colors.
Yes. Okay. And, of course, winter would be very cold, I would imagine. And snow.
Icy conditions and snow conditions up there. So in winter time, we don't go to the Dragon Lakes and we don't cross Vikos Gorge for safety reasons.
Fair enough. Okay. So what else? I mean, I think that's extraordinary. But anyway, can you beat that? Can you beat Zagori?
It is an amazing area. So we move towards to the south of Ioannina Prefecture. It's called the Djoumerka or Athamanika. Mostly it is mountainous and has history from the ancient times. It is called Athamanika because at ancient times a tyrant from Orchomenos, very close to Athens, he escaped from his city-state because he was a dictator, and his citizens wanted to kill him. So he hided into that region, Djoumerka or Athamanika. The natives at that period, they didn't know that he was a dictator. And they are very honored that a king came to that place to stay. And also there is another small river up there to the mountains. That the name of that small river is Chrusias, as a name, but he's the grandson of mythical Achilles, from the Trojan War.
The hero, yeah.
Achilles used to have his best special forces during that war. The name of that forces was Myrmidones. They came from Thessaly. But it is written that Myrmidones at Thessaly is very close to sea level. They were coming up to the mountains at an altitude of more or less of 2,000 meters to do some practice. Because if you go to an alpine altitude, the air is lighter. So the body must produce blood cells in order to breathe and all the organs to operate well. And most of the professional football or basketball teams or athletes, they go to high altitudes to prepare. So they were very innovative. That area is famous. They have two highlights there. The first one is the monastery of Kipina. If you see to the maps, Kipina, K-I-P-I-N-A.
Yes. I actually shared an article about Kipinas a few weeks ago, and funnily enough, a lot of people responded to it and said that they'd been there, but they get it confused with Meteora, which is not far, but it's not the same. It's not the same place.
Yes, but Kipina is older than the Meteora monastery. It was built in 1212 AD, and it is built inside the rock. And over there, it was operating a secret school because in order to access the route to enter the monastery, you should cross a wooden bridge. So the monks who stayed there, they were pulling the wooden bridge in order not to be the Ottomans to enter to that monastery. And at that monastery, there is a cave inside there. It is amazing. And that monastery celebrates every Easter Friday, and it is called that celebration, religious celebration, life-giving source celebration. And also, at the area of Jumerka, it is the highest single arch stone bridge in Balkan Peninsula and the third highest in Europe. It is the single arch stone bridge of Plaka, which was constructed to the end. First, it was constructed to the end of the 19th century. And only at that case, they didn't use the grass for the ingredients of constructing stone bridges, but they used the wool from the goats and 24,000 X.
That's amazing. It's like the Pavlova, Yanis. we were just talking before about Pavlova. John would love to see this. As I said, we've seen a few, but this one has such a high arch. It doesn't look like it's even possible, the engineering for the time for it to be still standing now. And now you tell me it's made out of goat's wool and egg whites.
Yes. 24.
That's unbelievable.
X.
Wow.
And it was the borders between the Greek state and the Ottoman Empire until 1913. When Epirus was liberated from the Ottomans. So at that stone bridge, there is still the customs building. And we prefer that river. It is the Arachthos Valley. It is the best river for rafting in Greece.
So much to see and do. I don't know how I'm going to decide on an itinerary. You've just made me even more overwhelmed and confused. But anyway, we'll work something out. Listen, we're running out of time. I know we probably could speak for many hours, but we're going to have to try to wrap it up. what would be one more highlight that I think, you know, our listeners should know about?
And another highlight, do paragliding from the mountain of Yanina, just and landing just beside the lake.
Okay, well, I won't be doing that, but yes, there could be some listeners out there that would be very interested. I mean, this region really is a region that would be so attractive to people that love the outdoors, that the hiking, the rafting, the canyoning, the paragliding, swimming. There's so much to see and do outdoors. It's quite extraordinary.
It is also the local recipes, because Epirus region is very famous for the pies in Greece.
Yes.
Because, okay, for example, if you go to another place in Greece and you want to ask for a pie with vegetables, you ask for spinach pie. Here we have
spanakopita.
Yes. Here we don't have only spanakopita. We have lahanopita. It is translated to vegetable pie. It also includes spinach inside, but includes also other vegetables that we cannot collect them from a greenhouse, for example, or from a garden. You need to go outside to find that wild herbs in order to make this pie. And consider that.
Is that like horta?
Horta, yes, horta.
So I have to say, though, everywhere I've been in Greece, every place, every island claims to have the best pies in the whole country. We were just on Skopelos in September, and, of course, there's Skopelos pies. I know Corfu pride themselves on their cheese pies. Thessaloniki have pies, and Crete have pies. It's a fabulous place if you love pies. And when I say pie, I think Australians think they have to have meat in them, and of course in Greece they rarely do, and they're more like phyllo triangles or phyllo pastries.
Here in Epirus they have two different types of vegetable pie, lahanopita. One is the regular one with phyllo, and the other one is without phyllo. It is with corn underneath and corn to the top. And it is called batsaria. It is only, they only make this vegetable pie in Epirus region.
Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to trying that. As I said, we have run out of time. I think we might even need to schedule another session, another time. But Yanis, if you had to choose somewhere outside of Epirus, what's your favorite? You know, what's another favorite place that you love to go to in Greece? Obviously,
Athens, of course, because it is the birthplace of democracy, Acropolis. And the Temple of Poseidon at Sunion Cave, especially in August, to see the sunset from one hand side and the full moon from the other hand side. The full moon comes inside of the columns of Poseidon.
It is, I hadn't thought about that.
It is Kali Marmaros Stadium, which started, Pierre de Coubertin started in 1896, the modern Olympic Games, and of course Presidential Garden, which is a part of my life. So also other places, Rhodos Island. We love Rhodos Island, the old town, Lindos town, Afandu Beach, and Katavia at the southeast point of Rhodos Island. Crete Island, the Chania city, Agios Nikolaos City, Rethymno, and Knossos for the history. And the history of Knossos collapsed when it was the eruption of the volcano of Santorini. And of course, Peloponnesos,
yes.
Μονεμβασιά, Μεσίνες, Επίδαυρος, etc. So it is not only one favorite place in Greece, there are so many.
I know it's impossible, but you're naming a lot of my favourites too, and the reason is mostly because of they're very rich in history. All of those places They're very authentic and very charming, most of them as well. So, yes, you could easily spend 6 months in Greece and probably a year and you still wouldn't cover it all. And really, it's not that big a it's not that big a country. And yet the diversity never ceases to blow me away, truly. Just on a parting note, you mentioned your military service, and I believe that you were an Evzones.
Yes,
6 years. One of the presidential guards, which is a huge honour, and I feel very privileged to now be able to say that I have met an Evzones, because I have never met any. I go and see them every time I go to Athens. I think as a mother of a young man, I look at those Evzones and I think how incredible it is that they've been chosen, that their commitment and their pride just shines through, and I think they're incredible and especially good to see on a Sunday, as you know, when they go up to the Acropolis. But you're not serving anymore. You're training. You help train them.
I was training them for 6 years.
That's amazing. And so would you go out there? This is a whole other this is a whole other podcast episode, but would you go when they do the changing of the guard and make sure that they were following the correct ritual, or did you do everything behind the scenes? We wouldn't, like, the public wouldn't see you?
Both.
Okay.
So we were responsible for training, and we were watching them during their duty in order to, if they do any mistakes, to tell them that that step you didn't do well. You didn't stand up very well. You didn't use your weapon very well. So we need to improve in daily basis and think about that these young people are volunteers to go to the presidential camp. Mm. And it is the life over there is very tough, because you must have discipline there and focus only to your duty.
Well, you did a very good job, because I have never seen any of them make any mistakes or anything that was certainly noticeable to any of us. So well done. Yiannis, we will leave it there. Thank you so much for your time today. It's a fascinating part of Greece to talk about, and I'm sure we're going to talk some more. You have a business called Epirus Traveller, based out of Yanina, and you are able to organise tours for people, excursions, activities. So I will make sure that I put a link to your business on the podcast page when it is published. Yeah, so thank you so much. I'll let you go about your day.
Thank you very much for your invitation. It's a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you very much. Kelisto and Yasuo.